Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday PM, April 8, 2012.
Turn in your Bibles to the, once again, the fourth chapter of 2 Corinthians, and we'll close out the chapter tonight. 2 Corinthians 4, begin with verse 16. So we do not lose heart, though our outer self is wasting away. Our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this slight momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. As we look not at the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. And this is that text that I want us to consider tonight. As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are not seen. But first, let's consider the context of that text and begin again with verse 16. For we do not lose heart. And then he says, why we do not lose heart, or as the King James says, we faint not. Though our outer self, that is the outer man, the King James calls him, which is what Paul actually wrote, is wasting away, but our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this slight momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to the things that are seen, but at the things that are not seen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. In this paragraph here, we have, and I hope you've noticed, a series of contrasts, in different ways. For he tells us about the inner man and the outer man. He tells us about perishing but being renewed. He tells us about something light and something weighty. He tells us about afflictions and glory. He tells us about something momentary and something eternal, and about things that are seen and things that are unseen, about the transient and the everlasting. And these are opposites that seem to be coupled together, and they seem to present to us two different points of view. He speaks of the outer man and the inner man. The outer man, by which he refers to our human bodies, and the inner man to that part of us which is moral, which is can be aesthetic, but mainly to that which is spiritual and has the ability to commune with God. And he speaks of the outer man perishing and the inner man being renewed. Now we know that as we age, we not exactly waste away the way Paul was saying here. His was a special point. But we aren't what we used to be. There's an ad on the television not too long ago that said, every year after age 40, we lose, I don't know if we remember, it was 2 or 3% of muscle mass from our bodies. And this compounds as we grow older. Have you ever noticed, or if you've noticed, have you ever read very much of the obituaries in the daily paper? It's seems to be a practice to not print a current picture of someone in an obituary. There was an entry into the obituaries just last week where I think it was a 93 or 94-year-old man, quite a famous man, who had died. You'd never know it by his picture. It had to be a picture of him in the prime of his life. It's rather deceiving. And, of course, we often deceive ourselves in such matters. But the outer man is subject to decay. The inner man, we can let him go to decay, or he can continue to grow and mature independently of the outer man. That's one contrast that the apostle made here, of the younger person and the older person, and of the outer man perishing while the inner man is being renewed. The apostle here is not trying to give us generalities, although they are. He is giving us his own personal experience, to which we can all of us understand and think of concerning ourselves. And then he speaks of the light and the weighty. Specifically, for this light momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. Did you know that glory had a weight? Of course, it is not something that you can weigh in a balance. And here he means a weight in the same sense as we speak of Paul's enemies spoke of him. His letters indeed are weighty, and truly they are. But he contrasts the light and the weighty. He speaks of, for this light momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory. As I said, he's giving his own testimony here. And have you ever considered what he called light? Let's turn back up into the chapter to, we'll look back up, but those of you who have iPads can turn up to verse 8. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. He's speaking in generalities there, but it's a pretty weighty matter, I would think. But let's turn over to the 11th chapter of this same letter and begin with verse 23, where we read, he said he has far greater labors, comparing himself with others who were boasting of their work, and far more imprisonments than they, with countless beatings and often near death. 5 times I received at the hand of the Jews 40 stripes less one. That was the ultimate punishment for under Jewish law. 3 times I was beaten with rods. That is the punishment, the ultimate punishment, other than crucifixion, of the Romans, to be beaten with those lictor, I guess that's what they call them, rods, of the fasces. 1 I was stoned. 3 I was shipwrecked. 1 day and 1 night I was adrift at sea. On frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger among false brethren, in toils and hardships, through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. Now we only read a few of these things in Luke's account in the Acts. When these other occurred, we have no way of knowing, but it would certainly be interesting to know. But all of these things he referred to in his light as a light affliction. To me, that is amazing. I would call it pretty heavy if it happened to me, but he called it light. And he was speaking, I think, hyperbolically in comparison, as was often the case in rabbinic teaching, in comparison to what he expected, to an eternal weight of glory corresponding to his light affliction in this life. To me, that is amazing that he could look at his life in that way. And it makes me kind of ashamed of myself for ever complaining. I don't think there is another Christian who has endured the sufferings that Paul did for the gospel as he did. Certainly, I have never read any account of it. But he spoke of his anticipation of his eternal future as being so much greater than all of the things that he had suffered. Have you ever contemplated your future in heaven in such concrete terms as that? So he contrasts the light and the weighty, light afflictions against an eternal weight of glory. And he contrasts the momentary against the eternal. For we read, for this light, momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. Momentary, for all of those afflictions that we just read, it was but about 20 years prior to this time when he wrote this letter that he was confronted by Jesus on the road to Damascus. And he, without reserve, then and there, committed himself, his life, and all that he was unto the Lord Jesus. Now, 20 years when it's ahead of you is forever. 20 years behind you is yesterday. And just 20 years after his conversion, he had already suffered all of these things. He had evangelized in Arabia. He had evangelized in Syria. He had evangelized in his home country of Cilicia. He had evangelized in Cyprus and in Galatia of Derbe and Lystra, and in Pisidia, in Central Asia Minor, Antioch and Pisidia. He did evangelize in Ephesus and in Alexandria Troas before crossing over into Macedonia, evangelizing at Philippi, in Thessalonica and Berea, and in Achaia, where he had evangelized in Athens and in Corinth. And then throughout all of the region of, it slips my mind right now, but it's where today is the country of Albania, and the coasts of the former Yugoslavia. All of these nations, all of these countries, he had already evangelized and planted churches. In 20 years' time, Brother Cook, do you think that that would be quite an accomplishment for 20 years? You've had 20 years' experience. And he had already suffered all of these things. Well, there's never been another Paul, but we can aspire to be like him to the extent God leads us in his will in that way. And we can cherish the more his writings. For he had not yet gone back to Jerusalem, where he was engulfed in a riot. He had not yet served his time in Caesarea in a Roman prison. He had not yet been again shipwrecked in the Mediterranean. Oh, and by the way, in that shipwreck, he evangelized the islands of Malta. And he had not yet been to Rome, where he stood before Caesar. But that is a full life in those 20 years. It is an overmuch of suffering in those 20 years. And yet he calls it transient. And he contrasts it with the eternal, the everlasting that he looked forward to. I marvel as I read these lines. But then there is one contrast I want to emphasize tonight, and that is our text. A text that grabs your attention, a text that challenges, and that is this: as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. And the English does not bring out the full force of what he's saying, because in English we have just a present tense to describe the present. But the Greek present tense implies an ongoing experience. And to directly translate it into English doesn't make much sense. We are continually looking not to those things that are continually being seen, but to the things that continually remain unseen. But happily, our translators have cast it in English diction, which does give us this thought. The King James says, for, this version says, as, both of them implying a continuing experience. As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are not seen. And the contrast here I would like to call your attention to is the word look and the word see. They do not mean the same thing. If I tell you, oh, look, and point over there, what do? You turn to look. Then I say, what do you see? The word look in both languages means to direct your attention to something. And the word to see means to observe or to behold. While we look, while we do not direct our attention to the things our eyes can see, but we direct our attention to those things that our eyes do not behold. This is the only way I'm sure that Paul could endure what he did. He did not direct his attention to the things of this life. Now, that doesn't mean that he discounted the things of this life. He did not. In writing to his friend Philemon, he said, "For God has freely given us all things to enjoy." He expects us to enjoy the things that he has given us, but many people don't. Many Christians don't. They don't enjoy what they have until they're gone. You remember the old saying, you don't appreciate the water till the well runs dry. How often do we take life for granted? How often do we take good health for granted? I've mentioned here a few times, but I'm going to mention it again. I did not observe it myself. I wasn't there, but my father tells me. About a time, it was back in Depression times, when the church group he was with decided they would hold meetings monthly at the county farm. How many of you know what the county farm is? It's the poor farm. It was where people went to be cared for before Social Security and before general welfare. And it was where people went because they didn't have what we then called, insensitively, an insane asylum. So my father said that as they were holding a church service in this place, it was a large hall and lined all the way around on the second floor, open to the first floor, were padded cells for inmates. And hardly did they get started with the service when someone began rattling the bars of his cell. And he pointed his hand right down at the group and says, "Have you ever stopped to thank God for a sound mind?" I hadn't until that my father told me that. How often do we not appreciate the good things that God has given us? And he has given us all the good things of life to enjoy, but not to set our attention upon, not to observe them instead of the things that are unseen, which are the things eternal. But that is only a part of the picture. For though the word look corresponds directly with the English word look in to direct your attention to, it is the verb form in Greek of a Greek noun of the same word, which means a goal. So Paul is setting in contrast here two different goals of life. Two different ways of life determined by these two different goals of life. For the goal of life, he says, is not the things seen. The goal of life is not these good things God has given us to enjoy. The goal of life goes far beyond them into eternity, where, as Paul would impress upon us, everything is so much greater than we can imagine. And the goal of life should be those things which are unseen. When we lived in New Mexico, I had a very good friend, and, well, we're still friends, but he lives in Phoenix and we live here, so our contact is mostly Christmas cards now. But he was a very good friend of mine. He was a brother, and he loved the Lord to a point. He was generous. He was generous. He had a business, and it was a tire business. And to all of the clergymen, he would sell tires at his cost. He was generous to everyone. But over the years that I knew him there, I tried to impress upon him the importance of a full commitment of our life and everything that we have to the Lord and to His people. But he thought it was more important for him to go fishing than to go to church on Sunday. He thought it was more important for him to haul his boat to Lake Mead on 3-day holidays than to stay around and go to church or to engage in the work of the Lord. Finally, one day when I was trying to convince him of the importance to himself of commitment of his life to the Lord, he said, "I know this means everything to you, but to me it's just not that important." I think he was only more honest than many believers. And the proof of that is the lives which are being devoted to the things that are seen and not to the things that are not seen. So here we have two different goals resulting in two different kinds of lives with two different ways of living. Which goal do you think is important?